Welcome back to The Special Ed Strategist. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. If you've been following me on my solo episodes for season 4, you'll notice that I'm focused on the section 504. So today we're talking about advocacy. While much of our past discussions have centered around IEPs, that's right, it's equally important. I want folks to understand the ins and outs of section 504 and how it supports our students with disabilities. We're going to explore effective advocacy techniques and dispute resolution strategies that are going to empower both parents and educators. So we're going to dive in, equip ourselves with that knowledge to better support the students that we care about. So a quick recap, what exactly is Section 504? It's part of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, which prohibits discrimination based on disability in programs and activities that receive federal funding. So we're talking public school systems. So a 504 plan outlines those accommodations and modifications necessary to ensure that students with disabilities have equal access to education. Unlike their IEP friends, which are more specialized, 504 plans focus on removing barriers in the learning environment. To determine eligibility for a Section 504, schools typically conduct an evaluation process that's going to include that gathering of information from parents, from teachers, other professionals. We're going to review their academic performance and classroom behavior, and we're going to conduct any type of assessments if needed. So ultimately, a student must demonstrate a need for accommodations to access their education. So as a parent, if you're seeking a 504, I want you to kind of think about that lens. What accommodations would support your student so that they can access their education, access meaning bell to bell? It means that the disability must create barriers to learning that can be addressed through specific modifications or support. So we're going to begin here on why this is so important. Our 504 plans can include that wide range of accommodations, right? So while many people think of standard accommodations like extended time or preferential seating, I want to kind of share with you some maybe outside of the box accommodations that may not be commonly considered, but know as a parent you can advocate for them. Think about flexible scheduling, allowing a student to take breaks during their long assignments or tests. That's going to help reduce anxiety and fatigue. Also, if you have a student, again, that has anxiety and fatigue, and their challenge may be in science or math, perhaps having that in the morning versus the afternoon when they're more awake, or vice versa, depending on the student. Think about chunking assignments, breaking down larger projects into smaller, manageable parts with specific deadlines that can help prevent that overwhelm a student may feel and help prevent them from shutting down and not completing those assignments or tasks. We can also consider alternative assessment methods, so using oral presentations, video submissions, or creating projects instead of traditional written tests to assess knowledge in a way that suits the student's strengths. Think about also accessing a calm space, so providing a designated quiet area or sensory room where students can go to regroup when and if they're feeling overwhelmed. And then always consider any type of use of technology that may be appropriate for that student, whether it's incorporating apps or tools that aid in learning, such as speech-to-text software, graphic organizers to help students express their ideas without the barrier of written difficulties. So these accommodations, they're vital because they allow students with disabilities to engage with the curriculum and demonstrate their knowledge just like their peers. Here's the catch. The success of a 504 plan heavily relies on effective advocacy. So I just gave you a lot of accommodations. You're thinking this conversation is about advocacy. Well, in order to kind of advocate for those accommodations that are going to align with your either personal student or student you support, it's necessary to be able to have that effective advocacy so that you can prove is not the best word to use, but show and demonstrate to the school that this is the best plan of action to support that child's learning. So as you begin to navigate this process, start by observing your kiddo, again, personal child or kiddo in the classroom. Take notes on the specific challenges they face and areas where they excel. I then want you to prioritize those challenge areas so that you can start focusing on maybe the first one or two and then build from there, that we don't get overwhelmed with a huge document and things get watered down. So this is going to provide you with concrete examples to discuss during that meeting with school staff. We always want to make sure that we're keeping those positive relationships between home and school. It is definitely one of the most underrated aspects of advocacy, building relationships, establishing a rapport with a teacher, counselors, and administrators always make a world of difference when it comes to advocating and communicating on the behalf of a student. You can always start with those informal interactions. Perhaps you can volunteer at school events or participate in parent-teacher organizations. The goal is to create a connection that goes beyond just discussing your kiddo's learning needs. When school staff know you and understand your kiddo's strengths and challenges, they're going to be more likely, more receptive to communicate, collaborate, and be invested into finding solutions. Let's focus on effective communication for a minute. So advocacy is not just about what you say, but it is also how you say it, right? So be specific. So when you're discussing your student's need, avoid vague language. Instead of saying, "My child struggles with school," maybe say, "My child finds it difficult to stay focused during long lectures, which impacts their abilities to take notes effectively." So think about the specific ways that they are impacted bell to bell so that you can then communicate that to the staff and you have that knowledge as a parent. Always use data. Always come to your meeting with types of data. Be that super sleuth that you are. So back up that request with data. So if your child has previously benefited from extra time on tests, give those examples of improved performance as evidence. If you're thinking, "Well, Wendy, I'm not with my student during the day," think about it from a homework lens. Think about it from assignments and tasks that you have in your home. What works best? What is most challenging? So that you can then start to convey that information as it would relate into a school setting. Ooh, and when you're coming from your parent heart, those emotions can really run high. So especially when you're talking about your kiddo's education, try to remain calm. A professional demeanor can help that conversation focus on finding solutions. If you need to practice what you want to say and say it in a mirror, go for it. Say it out loud so you can hear yourself saying it. It is very hard to kind of put on that detective hat, so to say, that 504 hat, that conversation professional hat, when you really are truly trying to lead with your parent heart. We have that fear and love that we're trying to lead with. But in order for us to really get across what we're trying to say about our babies, staying calm, clear, and bringing evidence and data is going to be huge when you are advocating. Before a meeting, I want you to practice those key points. Again, whether it's the mirror, the out loud, friends, or families, to help you articulate your thoughts more clearly and calmly when it comes. I always say this, document, document, document. It's essential for those advocacy skills. So keep detailed records so that you are empowered when you're discussing your kiddo's needs, whether it's a digital platform, a note on your phone, or you're physically writing it out. But just documenting the areas, it's not documenting your whole kiddo's bell to bell, but really starting with, like I said, thinking about where are their impacts, prioritizing them, and then take one or two to document and then build out and grow from there. You can document your meeting notes, so having dates, who attended, key discussion points. You can always follow up with a meeting with an email that includes all of that information. Keep copies of any of the emails or letters that are exchanged with school staff. Document what accommodations are working and what are not. If you have an older kiddo, they're going to let you know this is working, this is not, and that way you can build from there. Note your kiddo's progress or challenges in response to accommodations. I think positive ones are equally as important. I feel like there's a little hint here of I'm saying, oh, the ones that they're having challenges with. No, I really want you to think of what is truly working. So then you can kind of, again, problem solve, think out of the box of what other options that you can still build upon for that success. Always kind of, again, create some sort of folder, whether that's the digital folder or a binder for organizing all your documents, some type of folder, so that you have everything in one place, so it becomes easy to access important information when needed, especially during meetings or discussions. And if you get forms home, whether you have a current 504 and even an IEP, I know we're not focusing on that right now, but take that copy and hold on to it, again, whether it's digital format or paper format, so that you're then able to pull it out quickly to reference it if you have any questions. Now, let's get into what happens when disagreements arise. So disputes can be stressful, of course, but knowing how to navigate them can make a huge, huge difference. All right. So starting to try to resolve the issues informally, you may want to contact the relevant staff members. So this could be a teacher, counselor, or principal, and request a time to calmly and articulately discuss your concerns. Again, prepare those points. So before the meeting, prepare your key discussions using documentation to support your case. Really try to be solution oriented, right? So approach the meeting kind of with this business meeting mindset geared towards problem solving. It's always more heard more receptively when we have a problem solving focus versus that point and blame, which I get when you're parent heart is again feeling, you know, not sure where to lead from, that fear and love. It's kind of like, where do we go and start to spin? But really trying to think about how can we be very specific with our intentions in our conversation and how do we problem solve from there? Instead of focusing on what went wrong, we're going to frame that conversation around what could be done differently. And we're going to talk about kind of in a little bit about how you can reach out to people in your area or other areas that have gone through similar things so they can also help with that problem solving aspect. After the meeting, send a follow-up email summarizing those key points, thanking them for their time so that reinforces your understanding and provides that written record of conversation. When it comes to 504, it's important to understand your rights that fall under Section 504. So if an informal resolution doesn't work and you need to escalate your concerns, you really want to check out a few resources for you. The U.S. Department of Education Office on Civil Rights, or OCR, they provide a comprehensive information about the Section 504, what it means for students with disability. NDRN, the National Disabilities Rights Network, is an organization that offers resources and guidance on disability rights, including how to navigate that Section 504. There's also Parent Training and Information Centers. They provide information on a variety of educational topics, including Section 504. You can always request mediation. This can be a helpful tool to bring in that neutral third party to help facilitate some discussions. You can file a complaint with OCR, the Office for Civil Rights, and make sure to gather all of that documentation that you've been holding on to, because they're going to want to see evidence to support your case. That all does not go so well or in the favor you're thinking. You can also seek legal assistance. So if disputes escalate, consulting with a disability rights attorney can provide that additional guidance and support. But how do we support you guys, right? As parents, as professionals, when it comes to that advocacy, you don't have to go it alone. National Center for Learning Disabilities, they offer some resources. There's rights law as a wealth of information, mostly about special education law, but it does give some practical advocacy strategies and resources for 504s. There's also community advocacy groups. Look in your community, Facebook groups, threads that may specifically entail either 504 or specifically your students' needs. So many communities have these local agencies and groups dedicated to support our families of children with disability. And they often hold workshops that can give you specific resources that are aligned with where you live. And then you don't always feel alone. So again, kind of recap, be persistent. Advocacy can take time. It's essential to stay committed to that process. Stay informed, keep up with current laws and regulations regarding Section 504, and understand any changes that can enhance your advocacy efforts. Also, share your story, whether that's through social media or community forums. Sharing your experience helps empower others and fosters that supportive community so you don't feel like you're recreating the wheel on it. So wrap all this up, advocating for your kiddo or your student under Section 504 doesn't have to be overwhelming. By understanding the law, building these powerful relationships, communicating effectively, documenting thoroughly, and knowing your rights, you can absolutely navigate this advocacy landscape successfully. Thanks for tuning in this week to the Special Ed Strategist. If you found this episode helpful, please do share it with others who might benefit. And don't forget to like and subscribe for more insights and strategies. Until next time, keep advocating, keep supporting, and keep striving for better education for all.